If you are sitting at home next to your radio, you're hearing the music faster than you are if you're in the hall.
Listening for the secret. Searching for the sound. This is The Sound Podcast with Ira Haberman.
Thank you. You've been listening to Holly Bowling and her interpretation of the Grateful Dead classic Saint Stephen on piano. It's part of her forthcoming release, Seeking All That's Still Unsung, out November 20th. I had the chance to catch up with Holly yesterday before her show in Colorado to talk about, amongst other things, her forthcoming record full of exclusively Grateful Dead songs and her interpretation of those songs and lots more. Here's how our conversation started. It's been a really weird time. I don't have to tell you that. The last 6 months have been really strange. But what has been awesome is that Holly Bowling has been there for us. And you continue to play a ton, even though all of this craziness is swirling around us. You know, the Alone Together sessions, there were 8 of them to start things off. How important was it for you to do something because you couldn't perform for people? How important was it for you to start something like the Alone Together sessions?
I mean, that was absolutely essential for me. I think, you know, everyone was going crazy, feeling shut in and panicking over what was happening and, you know, watching everything spiral. And, you know, for musicians, like watching just all of our work for the year get canceled one by one. And, you know, the only thing that was really making me feel better was playing. That was my moment of escape, you know. So those sessions became, you know, medicine for me and something that actually gave me some sort of structure in my life. You know, it's real easy for things to get weird when you're just sitting around all day over and over again.
Right. Yes.
And it was kind of a way for me to process everything that was happening too. Like as the weeks went on, I started playing around with incorporating things that were happening, you know, audio that had come in as a warning for everyone in San Francisco on our phones about COVID. And then, you know, some sound clips from friends, which gave me an excuse to reach out and kind of connect with people that I hadn't been talking to through this and see where everyone was at. And so in a lot of ways, I think that those sessions really carried me through the first few months of all this weirdness.
So you do the Alone Together sessions, 8 of them, and people are wondering, okay, what is she going to do next? How is she going to keep us company through all of this? And so you and Jeffrey decide to get a van, pile up all your gear into the van with the new doggo, and go on this wilderness tour. Was that something that you had discussed over breakfast, over dinner one night? Like, how do you come up with these ideas?
I mean, first off, that's something that was entirely born out of this situation that we all find ourselves in. It's not something I had ever considered before. I felt like the living room sessions, the Alone Together series had kind of come to a close, and I felt like I'd said what I wanted to say there, and I just wasn't feeling inspired to keep sitting in my living room and streaming, and I really needed a change. And we decided to go camping and hiking one weekend and get out of the city, which was kind of like a, you know, if we don't get out of the house and out of the city, we're both going to lose our minds, kind of a Hail Mary.
Right.
We passed a van on our way up there, and we just started talking about like, oh, maybe, you know, we had been talking about trying to take a road trip, and we just, you know, didn't know what that was. It was very much just like a little seed of an idea. And then we were out up in the mountains on this long hike, and somehow during the course of that, we hatched this idea that like, well, what if we took a road trip, but what if we brought all my gear, and what if we streamed from the middle of nowhere, and what if we like hit a bunch of places that we've been meaning to go forever and have never been to, and you know, made it a tour. And it's funny, like before all this happened, you know, I was always longing for more time at home, and I mean, I'm grateful to be on the road and to have gigs to play now more than ever. But you know, there was a part of me that was always like, you know, longing for that time at home and looking forward to it. And it's funny, after a few months, man, there's a part of being out on the road that I was really missing, even the not so great parts, you know, like just sitting on the highway and the load in and the load out and packing stuff up. There's like a rhythm and a routine there that's comforting that I was missing. And so Man, the first time we packed up the van with all the gear, even just loading cases, and I was like, oh man, there's something about this that is just like a thread back to normalcy that felt so good.
Right. You did 8 of them, I think, by my count so far, which is incredible. And they are all breathtaking. I mean, they are all so beautiful. Your playing, but also the cinematography is absolutely outstanding. Was there one or two of the places that were more exciting or more, more exciting for you than others?
You know, the one that stands out to me the most is the Salt Flats. And that, it was one of the most difficult ones to film. We woke up at like 3 a.m. to drive out there and set up in the dark because it gets so hot so early that you really have to, you have to be there early. And we wanted to do it at sunrise. We got out there in the pitch black and it was really intense. It's windy. There's no points of light anywhere. So you have no frame of reference. And, you know, the wind is howling and there's no one for miles. And it feels very much like you're on another planet, to the point where I was not really keen on getting out of the van and setting up at first because it felt like a little too crazy out there, you know?
Right.
But I think that the otherworldly feel and just how removed from anything I'd ever done before that I felt at that set was a really just unique experience, you know? And I think that it, with all these sets, the setting and the place and whatever's happening around me and the landscape, you know, all plays into the music and what comes out, in particular in the improvisation. And the Salt Flats is just a really prime example of that. You know, it felt different than any of them. And even though it was one of the hardest, I think the payoff there was worth everything that went into it.
Well, it's like you're playing on another planet. I mean, it was just so breathtaking and it's just so stark that it's just you for miles with nothing on the ground. I mean, seemingly nothing on the ground except salt, obviously, but it was crazy. Like from a visual appearance, it was just you. And I mean, they're all just you really, but this one was really stark because there were no flowers or trees or dirt or anything. It was just really you. And I don't know.
Yeah, man. I mean, there's nothing out there. That's not like an illusion that we, you know, filmed it at a particular angle to try to make it seem like something it wasn't. It's like,
yeah.
And I'd been there before, but in the middle of the day, you know, when you're driving cross country, if you're on 80, you got to stop and check it out. But this was completely different being there at sunrise, and in particular being there before the dawn was just, I mean, it was one of the craziest experiences of my life, honestly. It's just such a insane place.
Who scouted the locations? Was it you and Jeffrey? Like, who knew exactly where to go to get so many of these great shots? Like, I'm thinking of Yosemite with the trees behind you and Tahoe with the lake behind you. And there were just so many, you know, perfect, pristine shots of you playing. Who came up with these locations?
Jeffrey really masterminded all of that stuff. He did a lot of stuff with satellite images and, you know, looking to see what kind of terrain it was to get to these spots and if we'd be able to do it. And that gave us a pretty good basis to start with. So we had GPS coordinates for all these potential spots. But then there was a lot of figuring it out on the fly too. You know, we'd drive out there and we'd have 4 or 5 spots in mind that might work and none of them would be perfect, but we'd come around to Ben and be like, oh my God, that's the spot. Stop, pull over. Like, this is it, you know? But I think in the lead up to the tour, if we can call it that, even though it was a very unconventional tour, you know, I was keeping myself sane by practicing and spending all the time, you know, getting the music ready to go. And I think Jeffrey was keeping himself sane by having this project to work on of like mapping out all the locations and, you know, starting to fire them off at me and be like, what do you think about this spot? Check out this place. And we'd discuss it together. But yeah, I owe him a great debt for actually, you know, pinpointing all these spots on a map and doing all the legwork there.
Plus he got a whole bunch of new toys, right? He got a whole bunch of new cameras and stuff to play with, which was probably fun for him as well.
Yeah, he got a drone and learned how to fly it. And I've never been a huge fan of those things, but I got to say they take some incredible footage. And I'm so glad he did it against my complaints.
Yeah. Which brings us to Seeking All That's Still Unsung. I mean, there are still a few more dates that people can look forward to. You're playing tonight, actually, in Breckenridge, Colorado, and there are a couple more coming up after this. But it really does lead us to Seeking All That's Still Unsung, a collection of Grateful Dead songs that you'll be releasing November 20th. These are songs that people may have heard before, that you've played before, or not. But I'm curious about the arrangement of these songs. You know, many of them, St. Stephen and the 11 is kind of like a pair off. China Cat, Sunflower, and I Know You Rider is a pair off. And Sailor and Circumstance is a pair off. And I'm curious if we all know about Tahoe Tweezer, and we all know about Eyes of the World that you've done from, I think, 73 or 76. I can't, you would remember better than me.
74, you're close.
74. I knew it was in there somewhere. I knew it was a good one. Are you still at this point where you're looking for specific performances, or is it because you know the song so well that you can sort of just do St. Stephen the way Hollywood performs St. Stephen?
That's a great question. I don't really do the specific performance thing anymore. I did that with the Tahoe Tweezer and a couple other Fish jams, and then the Eyes of the World. And I also did a version of the Beautiful Jam. It's the Dark Star thing from the Cap. But all of those, I mean, it's a really different approach. And in some ways, those were growing out of the roots of my, you know, background in another life of classical music. So, you know, just for people that might not be entirely familiar, for those jam transcriptions, as I called them, I would take a particular show performance and write out note for note what I heard everyone doing, and then arrange that for something on my instrument. So I'm not improvising there. The creative part of that for me is choosing what to highlight, what to put in the background, what to leave out, what to really bring into focus and put in the front. And try to capture the feeling of that performance and what happened that night into my arrangement. And then on the flip side of that, that's like a very detailed, time consuming, I don't want to say excruciating, because it's a process that I absolutely love, but it's like very meticulous. And then on the other side of that, you know, the other thing that I love musically is having a complete open canvas, blank slate, launch pad to wherever you want to go, where I am as much surprised by what happens next as the listener. And, you know, we're all riding the edge of that same moment, kind of seeing where it takes us. And so that's really where I'm at now. You know, I still enjoy playing the transcriptions and arrangements of particular performances, but I kind of shifted away from that into, you know, honing the arrangements for the vocal sections and the composed sections of the songs, and then letting the improv that happens afterwards be my own, and really let that kind of take its own shape. So this album has a lot of that. There's no specific recreation of anything. It's more like, even with the arrangements of the verses and that section, those sections of the songs, I've listened to, you know, versions of each song from a bunch of different eras, and then kind of let it coalesce, and then kind of let it come out in my voice on the piano the way that it shows itself. So it's less of a recreation and more of just a different slant on the whole thing.
Some of these tracks are pretty complicated. St. Stephen Into the 11 is not the easiest for the Dead to play, never mind Holly Bowling. And I've heard this from people who are in, you know, cover bands, that, you know, it seems obvious that St. Stephen and the 11 would be easy, or even that, you know, Lost Sailor, I've heard, is a very complicated song. How hard was it for you to play these songs and to, you know, get into them? Did it take a lot of practice for you to get it right? Or was it just a matter of improv and it is kind of what it is?
No, it took a ton of work, and I love that. You know, I love digging into songs that have a lot there to work with. You know, if I can figure it out in 3 minutes or less, I'm probably going to get bored pretty quickly. It's the stuff that I got to spend a long time on that really, that really does it for me and that sticks with me. So, those tunes, some of them I had to spend a ton of time, not just on getting the arrangement right, but physically being able to play it. You know, there's some big reaches in Lost Sailor that are just difficult physically on the piano to wrap your fingers around. Right. And then, you know, the 11 is just a beast to play. Yeah. You know, it's like, hang on and try not to fall off the back of the train.
The other one is Stella Blue, and you know, it is synonymous with Jerry, and I Jerry Garcia, and I don't care how many people have covered it or have played it, but I think everybody knows that it's one of the quintessential Jerry Garcia tunes, if there are any in the canon. How special was it for you to attack that song? And by attack, I mean learn how to play it. I don't mean like go at it with a knife and fork or a dagger or anything, but how hard was it for you to learn that song and to think about the power and the uniqueness and specialness of that tune?
I mean, I think you nailed it on the head, right? That song and there's a few other Jerry tunes like that. The thing that's difficult about them is it's not a technical thing. It's not like, how do I fit all the notes into that amount of space? You know, it's the opposite. It's like, there's so much space there and you really have to let the song breathe. And it's more about really allowing yourself to slip into the right headspace before you try to sit down and play it or it's not going to be right, you know? And I feel like that with a lot of these arrangements, you know, that a lot of the Bobby tunes are much more complicated to play technically or to even figure out. You know, there's like unexpected chord changes and really right. cool, you know, funky time signature stuff. And I love all of that. And for me, when I'm putting that onto the piano as a single instrumentalist, I got to leave stuff out. It's not possible to play it all. And it wouldn't sound good if I did play all the notes, you know? So it's sort of a subtractive process, pulling out the things that will still let the heart of it shine through, you know, the bones or the structure behind it. And it's the opposite challenge with a lot of these, you know, the Jerry ballads are like, even if the chord structure and the form of the song is super simple, pulling it off with meaning behind it is difficult, you know,
yeah.
And figuring out how to keep the lyrical nature of it and the storyline when you're taking the storyteller's voice away from the song. You know, you gotta put a lot of emotion into it in some other way to carry the arc of the music. So it's a opposite challenge, but I love the duality of, you know, having those two poles to alternate between, both, you know, in this album or in a live show. That's really what I think gives it its beauty.
You know, you're speaking of chord changes, Let It Grow is another one would have. I mean, you really challenge yourself with particular songs on this compilation, for lack of a better word, because Let It Grow is another one. Well, Weather Report Suite in general has so many chord changes. It must be tough to like figure it all out and then know where your hands are to reach all the appropriate places, right?
Yeah, it's so much fun though, man. And you know, getting to work with the Grateful Dead's music, it's such a deep catalog and there's so many gems like this to dive into and you just can never get bored, you know? I love it. I had so much fun working on the arrangements for these songs. And the other thing is, you know, all of these were things that I had played live before and I kind of made the album out of the stuff that I was gravitating towards most, playing live shows and that I was, you know, really having the most fun playing. When I'm playing live, there's always these physical limitations that I'm hearing something in my head that's bigger than what I can actually play with 10 fingers, you know? And so I'm constantly having to make compromises. So to go into the studio with these arrangements and be like, oh, well, this is how I always do it. But because I can mess around with overdubbing stuff in the studio, I can actually add the other parts that I'm hearing in my head that I can never actually play. And so to get to like, blow the whole thing open and have more tools to work with and just get to expand the whole soundscape to have like this bigger stage and this bigger set of tools to work with. It's still, you know, it's still all sounds generated by an unprocessed acoustic piano. So it's still very like clean and pure in that regard, yeah. But to just get to like open up these other possibilities was just so much fun. So much fun.
You're adding a little more percussion to what's going on. It's not just piano. I think, is it like a little cello that you have on top of you? What is that device that you have on top of the keyboard?
I have a whole bunch of weird stuff in there. So one of my favorite tools to use inside the piano is called a wand. It's sort of similar to an e-bow. I use those too. And so they're little devices that use magnetic coils to vibrate the strings of the piano without actually ever striking it. So instead of getting like the hammer hits the string, you get the attack and then it just decays. And that's the end of the sound. There's nothing you can do to sustain a piano longer, really. You know, unlike a stringed instrument where you can hold the same note on a cello for 3 days if you feel like it.
Right.
So this thing lets you not only sustain a note out of the piano, but you can also move it down the length of the string and pull out different overtones. And so you get these beautiful halos around the notes. It's really fun to play with. But I also pluck the strings, I'll palm mute. I have various percussion mallets and magnets. And I've, you know, lately been playing around with actually, you know, whacking the frame of the piano and the harp and trying to get some really percussive sounds out of the piano. And that's been fun to keep digging further and further into the instrument.
We've talked about this several times before, about the very karaoke nature of the music, because, and that's not fair, but singing along, because we all know all the words to all of these songs. When you're in the middle of the Salt Flats playing these songs, and it's just you, do you have the vocals in your mind? Like, are you ever tempted to sing any of this stuff? Or I know you're not a singer, but it's impossible not to think about the lyrics that go along with these songs, right?
Yeah. I mean, I'm never going to pull like a Keith Jarrett or Glenn Gould and be vocalizing a lot while I'm playing. That's just
right.
Not my style. but I'm always keeping the vocal line in mind. In fact, you know, people will ask me like how much of this stuff is written out and how much isn't. And one thing that I think people are surprised by is even if I have no notes on the page written out for a particular song, sometimes I'll just have the lyrics, even though I'm doing nothing audible with them, because I want to have that line in my head the whole time. And I want to be thinking about each piece of vocal inflection and how I would deliver it if I was a singer. And I want that thread going through it, even if I'm never externally like putting it into the music, it's gotta be there underneath. So I'm singing those words in my head and going through the story arc of the song in my mind every time, always.
Yeah. while I'm singing along, which is great. There was a few weeks ago, I think, maybe 6 weeks ago, a Ghost Light reunion of sorts. I think you were out east and you managed to catch up with some of your bandmates. What's happening with Ghost Light? Are you working on new music? I mean, obviously you're not playing together, but is that an ongoing thing that you're working on new music and eventually will see the light of day?
Yeah, man, everyone's working on stuff by themselves. You know, I don't think any of us are super keen to be trying to create music together when we can't all be in the same room and have that, you know, real-time exchange with each other, because that's, you know, a lot of what the band is built on. And I think that's been really hard for all of us. You know, I'm definitely envious of bands that all live in the same area that can actually get together safely during this, you know? So yeah, I mean, I think we're all waiting, just waiting. Right. Everyone's still playing and writing, but, it's just hard being on opposite ends of the country.
What happens when you wrap up the wilderness sessions? Is it time to take a break for a little bit and reflect on the last craziness of that tour, that leg, and everything that you've accomplished during this pandemic?
Yeah, you know, the timelines worked out pretty cool. We have three more wilderness sessions. The last one is on the 19th. And then the album drops on the 20th. So there's a pretty easy segue there for me to, you know, focus on the album for a while. And it's been a long time coming. I mean, I started recording this thing in 2019. So it's cool to feel like not only is the Wilderness Sessions wrapping up, but I get to bring this other thing to fruition and get that out into the world. And then after that, I'm probably going to take a little time for myself and, you know, growing a tiny human and
right.
A little time there.
Yeah. I always forget how public it is, but I think you did say on Instagram or on Facebook that there's a little tiny human growing inside. When do you expect a tiny human to poke its head out?
That'll be February. So,
wow. So it's not too far away, actually. Yeah. Time will fly.
Yeah.
Well, congratulations. Congratulations on the Wilderness Sessions. I got to tell you, like, everybody that I talk to is so psyched to catch the next one to see how much more beautiful the one scene is from the last. Like, and since the Salt Flats, I mean, it's been, that was really unbelievable. And people are still, friends of mine are still talking about it all the time. So congratulations on that. And then the achievement of creating another great record of great songs that are performed the way only Holly Boley could perform them. It's a great accomplishment. I mean, there's just the amount of music. You've been so prolific over the last 6 months. It should be the envy of most musicians, even though, you know, you've had to deal with a lot of nonsense. So thank you.
It's been great, man. I've been really grateful to have the opportunity to play. Still, I think I'd be going crazy otherwise. And, you know, it's one of those things, like I've been able to do that through the generosity of people that are watching streams and, you know, supporting it voluntarily. And that is an incredible thing, not to just feel like I still have work that I love doing, but to feel like the community of music lovers that, you know, we're a part of is, even though we have to be apart right now, like it's still very much alive and well, and it's, you know, it's holding us all together still. And that's been a really, you know, a saving grace.
I was going through my Facebook feed yesterday, as I do, looking for good news, not any of the other nonsense that's going on around us. And it came up that you were in Toronto exactly 2 years to the day, I think yesterday.
Oh, no way.
Yeah. So we have to get you back up here soon when all of, well, first of all, when you're allowed to come into this country. But it's important that we see you real soon. And if we don't, good luck with the baby and with everything. And make sure that you take some time for yourself. You know, your partner is pretty good at taking care of a lot of things. Maybe he should take care of a lot more when you're resting with the baby. And you can for sure let him know I said that. All right.
I will pass that on.
All right. Thanks so much for taking the time, Holly. We really appreciate it.
Yeah, man. Thanks for having me on. It's great to talk to Ira.
Always great to catch up with Holly. Aside from being a talented musician, she's always been super available to us and truly is a friend of the show. I'd encourage you to check out the rest of her Wilderness Tour each Thursday night until it wraps up November 19th. You absolutely need to hear Seeking All That's Still Unsung when it's out November 20th. Before we leave you, let's have a listen to another track off of Seeking All That's Still Unsung. Here is the Grateful Dead's Saint of Circumstance.
You've been listening to The Sound Podcast. Technical production by Adam Karsh and Andrea Ruse. Inspired by the music we love. For more, visit thesoundpodcast.com.